This is Fire Through Spirit with Corby Midline. Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Corby Midline.
The holidays are coming, so we need to figure out what to do with them. We need to figure out what to do with all our guests with the open house. We need to do all of that wonderful food-related holiday planning. Well, who better to help us with that than my more than occasional co-host, Chef Christy? She is not only a fabulous chef, she is also, for the holidays, Mrs. Claus. She and her friend Dallas Fox are two of the best Mr. and Mrs. Clauses you have ever met in your life. And it's kicking up to their season. But Mrs. Claus doesn't just do the cookie thing. So we're going to be talking to her about all the possibilities for holiday fooding and feeding and how to put it together and keep your brain together. And remember that the spirit of the holidays is hospitality, love, joy, not I burned the quiche. Hi, Christy. It's good to have you here.
Hey, Corby. Thanks for having me back.
So, this is close to Thanksgiving when we're on the air. And so people are beginning to crank out the holiday party ideas. You were laughing because you saw on Facebook that I was saying, okay, I need recipes and I need it for paleo people and vegan people and vegetarian people and gluten-free and I was getting great recipes, but you get overwhelmed.
Yes,
so
you sure do.
Let's start with what's holiday party and fooding about in the first place? Because again, there's centuries old traditions with these things.
That's very true. And you mentioned it in your intro that there's a lot of spirit of hospitality and generosity and opening your home so people can come and visit. And, you know, there are whole holidays after Christmas in Europe that are based on the traveling from house to house and visiting. That's actually a structured part of the holiday celebration in Europe and in the old world is that on Boxing Day and on the 27th and you know, the days between Christmas and New Year's, that people have open houses and they provide hospitality. They have wassail, which is a variety of beverages that can be alcoholic or non, but generally always warm for the people coming. You know, whether you're welcoming carolers to your doorstep and giving them some hot chocolate or hot cider, or you're having an open house like some psychics that I know.
What's Boxing Day? I hear it and all I can think of is Muhammad Ali wearing a holly wreath, and I know
it's
about.
It's not.
Where did Boxing Day come from?
No, that Boxing Day does not mean fisticuffs. Boxing Day is 26th of December. So it's the day after Christmas, and there are a couple of different theories on where it came to be. One is that apprentices that would spend the year with the factory or the worker or the artisan that they were apprenticed to would have the opportunity to go and collect a Christmas box on the day after Christmas that might have a coin in it or a meal or a special thing that they would be given from either their employer or the church, or, you know, maybe their parents would send a box. So that's one of the origins. But what it really has come to be is it's the day to recognize your service workers. So the postman, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, maybe your car mechanic, the people who you deal with every day that you might want to give something to, or even if it's just a card. I think a lot of postmen get Christmas cards on that day addressed to them, and a tip is always nice. That's certainly part of the tradition. So it's a day to recognize workers. As you know, the days leading up to Christmas are for family for a lot of people, and the Christmas celebration for some people is a very sacred day. For some people, it's all about the presents. For some people, it's all about the Christmas dinner. The day after Christmas is for recognizing the people that help make your life workable. So all of the service givers that give you. So that's what Boxing Day is. There's a
Thank
lot
you.
Of things that there's a lot of things that fall on that 26th, 27th of December in old European traditions. But that's people in the United States. some of them know that. Some of them that appreciate the Boxing Day tradition and do make a point of leaving tips for their postmen, their maids, their, you know, people that do that kind of service for them. It's a little better known here than some of the other more obscure European holiday traditions. We hear it
okay.
about it.
So yeah, we hear it here about we it. Are, whether it's on Boxing Day or it's before or it's New Year's Eve or whatever, there's this party.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do? It's like we were talking about before the show. We live in a little bitty county. There are 77 people on my open house list because in a little county, well, if you invite X, you have to invite Y. But what about Z? You don't want them to find out there was a party and they didn't get invited. Mm-hmm. And mean. And of course, some are paleo, some are veg, some are vegan, some are gluten-free, some are peanut allergies, and you're trying to figure out what can you feed them that you are not in the kitchen slaving the entire time instead of visiting with people. So convenience and pre-prep is a lot of that too, but you've done enormous medieval feasts. You know what it takes to do pre-prep. How do we do
that? Well, and part of it is that you want to be present for your guests. You want to be hospitable. You don't want to be stuck in the kitchen. You don't want to be exhausted because you have been up until the wee hours of the morning the night before doing getting stuff ready. So part of it is the planning should be the hardest part of your work, getting the planning done ahead of time so that you can make it all go smoothly the day of. I think is probably the most important thing so that you have a good list. And when I put together a list for a party, I tend to brainstorm and put everything that I could possibly want to need, want, or desire, anything I want to do, every person I want to accommodate, every food recipe that I want to try, just write it all down, get it all down on a piece of paper, and then start looking at it and going, okay, what's realistic here? What is going to, break the bank. Let's take that off. We're not feeding champagne and caviar to everybody. All right. Cross that one off.
Nope.
And what's doable? Can I have my Jewish friends over and have a kosher meal? No, I don't have a kosher kitchen. That's not doable. You know, take those things off the list. Yes, I'd love to do that, but it's not going to happen. Hot air balloon rides for everybody that comes, not going to happen. You know, so kind of weed through your ideas of the things that you'd like to do and look at them and go, well, if I did one special thing rather than five really incredible things, maybe it would be easier and people would remember that one thing. So get yourself a good list, brainstorm about everything you'd like to do, and then start whittling it down so that you have a much more realistic list and you still get to do some of the fun things that you want to do. You know, you don't have to toss them all out. You just have to toss the ones that are not going to be financially realistic, that you're just not going to have the energy for, that you know that you're going to have, you know, your sister and her kids and your brother-in-law and you know, the house is just going to be overrun and there's no way you're going to get all these little fiddly things done, you know, make it easy.
Mm-hmm.
So take those things into consideration about what your situation is going to be and how it's going to be easiest for you. Not that you aren't mm-hmm. already committing to put work into it. A party is work. Putting on a party is a lot of work, and there are a lot of little details, and you're giving of yourself when you do that. So mm-hmm. a lot of people want to give of themselves until it hurts, and that's where you should pull back from. It shouldn't hurt. Yeah, you're going to put a lot of work into it. Yeah, it's going to cost you a fair amount of money. And yes, you're going to be, you know, concerned about what people think about when they see that picture on the wall or that spot on the carpet or whatever. You know, there's going to be little details like that mm-hmm. that will make you crazy. But you can make it a little easier on yourself by having a decent plan that you can look at in the cold light of day and say, is this realistic or not? What can I whittle down? So that's my first real specific tip is make a list, check it twice. I'm starting to sound like Mrs. Claus.
Yes, you are. when you prioritize.
Hey, it works for us.
What is the, it does. But when one prioritizes, where do you go first? For me, it's people to space. You know, we have this itty bitty weeny house, which is why we're having this open house over 2 days because 77 people are not going to show up for a 4-hour thing. They're just going to kind of drift in and out.
And you don't really need 77 people in a small space all at once anyway. So having a broader time frame spreads that out and makes it easier on you. It means that you have to have things ready and be mm-hmm. on, you know, quote unquote, on for longer.
Yep.
But it does ease the burden of oppressive people all at once. So that's a really good idea of looking at your timing, the time of day and the time that the party, the duration of the party. Now, time of day also matters when you're talking about what kind of food you're going to serve, because if you're going to have an evening party, if it's after 8 o'clock, then you're probably not going to be serving a full meal. You're going to be doing hors d'oeuvres. If it's in the middle of the afternoon, again, light snacks. But if it's at over a meal time, if it's at noon or if it's at 6 o'clock at night, people are going to expect dinner service if you have a party at those particular times. So timing is important, because what you serve and when people show and if they've eaten or not before they get there is going to depend on the time that your party is. So I know that's not exactly the direction you were going with that. You were looking at time versus space, people versus space. But the timing of that is one of the most important components of what you're talking about how people are going to arrive and what you're going to serve.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I'm having everybody RSVP, so I can make sure. I can also ask them that time, is there anything I need to know about your food stuff? You know, you are really allergic to pineapple. One of the things I'm going to do is next to everything that I put out, the ingredient list will be on it. It didn't have to be that way in the 1950s, but with all of the processed food, chemicals, toxicity, GMOs, etc., we have a lot more allergies, and people need to know what's in that really cool purple glop. Can I eat it?
Yes, absolutely. I actually take a kind of a step to the side for a second. Read an interesting article recently about the preponderance of food allergies being tied directly to the overuse of antibiotics, killing off flora in our stomach that allow us to deal with things like peanuts, for example. Why are peanut allergies so big? Because overuse of antibiotics kills off the digestive ability of the stomach to deal with that, and you have an allergy. So that's another reason why it's much different now than it was in the 50s, because the way we have been treating ourselves has changed. So yes, the reality of it is, you are going to have guests that have a variety of different types of food issues. And just assuming you're not going to run into religious restrictions, I mean, you might, but just the food sensitivities alone have gotten to be quite the minefield to navigate. So a recipe card, definitely a good idea. Not a recipe card, an ingredient list. You don't have to give the whole recipe, but an ingredient list of what's in it is very important. And be honest. I mean, if you're going to do it, be honest. If you put a couple of tablespoons of sugar in it because it just didn't taste right without it, throw that on there. You know, say, yes, there's a little bit of white sugar in it, but small amount. Don't try and fudge, because if you've put a card out, then people are going to trust that. And if you didn't completely disclose everything that you put on it, then what's the point of putting the card out? See, I've run into people doing that before. I'm like, well, if you didn't say you'd put cheese in it, why did you put the card out?
I know.
I avoided it if there was cheese in it, you know. So, yeah, so if a recipe card, an ingredient list card, that's a great idea. Keep them as you go. You know, write it down on a piece of paper as you go when you're making stuff up, so that when you get to the point of sitting down and doing your little cards up, you've got it all written down and you don't have to do that by memory, because that's tough, especially if you've put in, I think I'll just add a little clove with that because the cinnamon alone isn't enough. You know, will you remember that later on? Maybe, maybe not. So, yeah, keep a running list while you're cooking and then make up your little ingredient list cards. That's a really good idea. And with RSVP, do you have any food sensitivities? I think that's a great line to add. Please inform the hostess of any food sensitivities. And if you know, and if you're concerned that people aren't going to do it because they don't want to bother you, you might really emphasize that point so that we can be sure that all of our guests have plenty to enjoy. Please notify us of any food sensitivities. You know, just really emphasize that you really want to know that. You're not being bothered by them. You're asking. And that will encourage them to let you know. So, yeah, so those are really good ways to start with the invitation of when are you coming and what can we serve you that you're going to enjoy? Or what can't we serve you? That's really what you really want to know.
Yep, exactly. So how do you figure out how much food? I'm definitely, it's one of the funny things that I've got is our very dear friends over at Sapbush Hollow, Shannon Hayes and Bob Hooper and her parents, Adele and Jim, they will all be coming. Bob's comment when I mentioned it to them was, hey, you're buying all of our grass-fed stuff, and then you're inviting me to come to your house and eat it too for free? I'll be there. Obviously, I'm going to have to do stuff with a Sapbush. But how do you determine how much food? It's one thing when you're having people sit down to a dinner, but when you're going to have people coming in and out and they're going to be, if you will, grazing, how do you judge how much is correct? God forbid you should run out of food, especially during the holidays. That's what freezers and leftovers are for.
Right. Well, it's also what fillers are for, like crackers and bread and, you know, things that can fill out a platter when the good stuff is gone. So you can always have a backup of more chips and salsa. You don't have to keep the highly refined hors d'oeuvres that you've slaved over coming all day. If they've run out and you have chips and salsa, you can always go with that as a backup. So how much to determine? Well, back up to what time it's going to be. Okay, so if you're going to have something that's a couple of hours in the afternoon, people are going to eat lightly. If it's going to stretch over a longer period of time, and especially if it's going to cross a meal time, then you've got to be prepared to serve more of a meal's worth of food. Like, for example, a sandwich bar, enough sandwich fixings for them to make a plate that, you know, would be roughly for a lunch. So you want to have, I mean, if you want to break it down to, you want to make sure everybody's got 4 ounces of meat and an ounce of cheese and, 2 ounces of bread, and you can certainly do that.
That's too hard.
It is. That really is kind of micromanaging it, but you can kind of guesstimate. If you've got a plate of hors d'oeuvres, for example, some canapes, you want to plan on people eating 2 to 4 of those each. Now, not everybody will, but that should be enough. If you plan on everybody grabbing 2 to 4 of those, you make a great big pan of quiche and cut it into little pieces, like we heard just a little while ago, you want to make sure that you're cutting 2 to 4 pieces. Like if they're inch square pieces, then about 2 to 4 of those. And people are going to eat more than one of those things, so you don't have to have a full serving of quiche or hors d'oeuvres, or you don't have to plan on each thing to fill up a plate because they will sample from different things. So if it's in pieces, go with 2 to 4 pieces. If it's a dip, you might plan on 1 ounce to 2 ounces per person just as a guideline. You kind of think about it in terms of each thing is going to serve a few pieces and or a couple of ounces per person, then you can kind of figure out when you get your RSVPs in. So you're going to have 50 people show up, then you can kind of divide out by that. And some things they're not going to eat as much of. It may be, I'm trying to think of an example of something like a sauce, for example, that might just get drizzled on top of something. Obviously, you don't need several ounces of that per person. You just need a drizzle. So, you know, it would depend on the density, I guess. The richness of the dish as to how much people are going to eat. If it's a really rich, dense food, they're probably going to not eat as much as if it's something light and fluffy like bread or chips or crackers or, you know, things like that, which go a little farther and, you know, are a little less nutritively rich. So, see if there's another good rule of thumb that I can give for what to serve people. You want to make sure that you have plenty of beverages on hand. And what I like to do for a big group of people is have punch bowl or cooler or some kind of drink dispenser that is not an individual. I mean, you can certainly do a cooler full of water bottles and sodas and beer and things like that. But part of the holiday coming to call aspect, going out and visiting people, is that shared beverage. So a big pot of hot cider on the stove, or a big punch bowl of wassail, or lemonade, or iced tea, or something. Now my southern roots are showing. But anything that's a big container of beverages will allow you to go a lot farther and make more if you need to. You know, have backup to be able to refill it. And that also encourages the communal sharing of that beverage. If everybody's drinking a cup and of wassail, that's kind
frankly, having something like that, especially like the cider, et cetera, et cetera. There tends to be alcohol at these places, but if there is an easy non-alcoholic choice instead of going and finding a bottle of wine and pouring a glass, that isn't such a bad thing.
It's actually
because you
want
to make sure that nobody leaves here thinking that they're going to ride Rudolph down the road.
Right. Well, and a lot of people kind of throw caution to the wind during the holidays and go, I'll diet when I get done. I'll diet in January. January diet sales go through the roof, you know, because people figured they're not going to worry about it until they get through the holidays. But if you are on a restricted diet of any kind, you find pretty quickly that when you get through some of these holiday meals, you feel sick as a dog.
Yes.
And you want to eat lightly sometimes because you've just had this enormous Thanksgiving meal, Christmas meal, meal at your mother-in-law's, whatever, and really all you'd like to do is sip some soda water and have a cracker. So providing things that are not so rich, that are lighter beverages and things like that, are a nice way to accommodate your guests without assuming that everybody's just going to booze it up the whole time. Not that you shouldn't provide some alcoholic beverages, but if you want, you don't have to. You can certainly throw a party without any alcohol. But
well, we like to, but we're not. We don't particularly drink only because this house would rather use its calories elsewise. But no, things like wine, absolutely. Don't expect to find 12 different kinds of bourbon. That's not this house.
Well, and if you don't want to stock a full bar, that's another good way of doing it, is providing one punch bowl with an alcoholic, a wine punch, a brandy punch, a wassail, which is usually hard cider or apple cider and ale. The amount of alcohol that you have to buy to make a big punch bowl of one kind of alcoholic beverage is a lot less. And then you don't have to worry about whether you've got all these different types of beer and wine and what everybody's drinking. This is what it is. And if you don't like that, then we've got a non-alcoholic version. We've got lots of water. We've got some tea, you know, whatever you want. So I have definitely done parties where the alcoholic beverage was in the punch bowl. And that's what was being served. And if people wanted to drink that, then that's what they were drinking. They weren't getting a full bar menu. And that is a great way of reducing your stress. You don't have to worry, do I have enough of each kind of alcohol that I want to serve? All you have to do is worry about your one recipe that's going in the punch bowl. Do I have enough to refill that several times? Yes, I'm good, then fine. So I'm all about reducing the stress on the hostess because there's never going to be a completely stress-free party. Because you're worried, you know, you're the hostess. You want to make sure your guests are having a good time. You want to make sure your house is clean. You want to make sure your animals are behaving, or your children. In my case, it's animals. A lot of people are more concerned about their kids behaving well. So there's going to be stress anytime you host a party. So the things that you can do to reduce that stress level on yourself are all golden, because you really want to make sure that you're having a good time, because you want to enjoy yourself to the best of your ability at your own party. That's your
if you're just joining us, we have just yammered for the first half. If you're just joining us on Fire Through Spirit, I have the fabulous Chef Christy, who at this time of year is also known as Mrs. Claus. And we are discussing everything you could possibly want to know about holding a wonderful holiday party, keeping the spirit going without driving yourself crazy. On the other half of the show, I know that you got hordes and hordes and hordes of questions on Facebook today, and I'm sure we're going to be answering some of those as well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, Christy, just very, very quickly, where are people going to find you if they go looking for you after this?
They can find me on Facebook at Chef Christy-ATL, or they can find me on my blog. My website is askchefchristy.com, and you can certainly send questions to me at either of those places, and I'll be happy to answer them. You can also find the cookbook that I have written called Easy Gluten-Free Entertaining on Amazon, or you can find a link to it on my website. So those are all good ways to get in touch with me.
And when we come back, she's going to share recipes. Yes, recipes. So get your pen, paper, iPad, whatever you're using, and get ready to take notes when we come back. You're with Corby Mitlide on Fire Through Spirit.
You're listening to Empower Radio. For a complete archive of Fire Through Spirit, visit empowerradio.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast through iTunes and Stitcher Radio. More Fire Through Spirit with Corby Mitlide next on Empower Radio.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cat stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Before there were computer games and HDTV, cram courses and teaching to the test, there was this thing called imagination. A tool so powerful, it could transport kids on the most amazing journeys of their lives, from outer space to center field at Yankee Stadium. It is for these journeys that Destination Imagination was created. An extraordinary after-school program in creativity and teamwork for every child. At Destination Imagination, teams are formed and challenges are met with a whole lot of imagination. And while we can't guarantee it'll get your kid into Harvard or onto American Idol, we're pretty sure that Destination Imagination will be the most important journey they make this year. Maybe any year. Parents, teachers, start a Destination Imagination team by calling 888-321-1503 or visit DestinationImagination.org. That's DestinationImagination.org.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Rattlesnake at the Pond.
Oh, Johnny, skipping rocks at the pond sure is fun.
Hey, look, a moving stick.
That ain't a stick. That's a rattlesnake!
Sassy! We're in danger!
Good idea, Sassy! Go get Mr. Gunderson! You will in a second, but first you'd like to tell us something we may not know about animal shelters in the United States?
It's getting close, Sassy!
Approximately 8 million pets enter shelters each year? The majority of which are in shelters because of owner-related issues that the animals have no control over?
Sassy, the rattlesnake! Save us, Sassy!
What, Sassy? You wish you were videotaping this? Sassy!
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
This is Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Now, back to Fire Through Spirit with Corby Mitlide.
Welcome back, my dears. We're on with Chef Christy, one of my frequent and favorite co-hosts this week, because as the holidays loom, it's a matter of what are we going to do when everybody comes over and we need to feed them. So this is all about how to make sure that the holiday spirit reaches the host as well as the guests. Christy, talk to us about all those recipes that you have floating around in that genius brain of yours. Please.
Okay. Well, you're right. I did troll for questions, actually, on my Facebook page, Chef Christy-ATL, today, and said, okay, what would you ask about holiday entertaining? And I got a lot of interesting questions, and a lot of them kind of clumped together in a few basic areas. One is, I have guests with specific dietary needs. How do I accommodate that? Another is safety. A lot of questions came through about, is it really safe to stuff my turkey? is it really unsafe to stuff the turkey before you bake it? How long do I leave things out at the party? And can I rotate things in and out of the refrigerator? And how long can I, reasonably leave something that's going to be sitting out and things like that? And those are excellent questions. Because when you set things out on a buffet table, unless you've got ice under them or a cooling tray or a sterno keeping them hot, they are going to have a lifespan of a few hours, and then you're going to want to either rotate that out or throw it away. So let's start with that one. Let's start with the food safety issues. Is it truly unsafe to stuff a turkey? Yeah, probably it really kind of is, because the main thing with stuffing a turkey is now you've created a complete solid mass that the heat has to go all the way through, and it has to bring everything up to temperature and keep it at temperature to be safe. And the thing that stuffing does is just makes it harder for that heat to go all the way through. Now, stuffing the bird does help keep its shape a little bit. And so what you'll see chefs doing is using things like an onion, a couple of oranges, maybe a parsnip, like putting whole vegetables in the cavity to roast to impart some flavor, but also to allow it doesn't become a solid mass like a bread stuffing does. And so, yes, I would say it is unsafe if you're planning on using a bread-based stuffing to cram into the cavity of your turkey and then try and roast it as a complete solid mass. You're not going to be as successful with that. And so if you feel like you must stuff, then use whole vegetables like a big onion, even a beet, something kind of root vegetables that are going to impart some flavor and be easy to pull out and also allow some airflow around them. So you're not completely stuffing the cavity full. So that would be the first question. And then about
so what do you do? Do you put the stuffing like around the turkey so it gets all the good juice and stuff?
You can do that, or you can make it as a dressing in a pan on the side. You can roast your turkey first and then use the drippings from that to make your dressing and then put the dressing in a pan and cook it off, depending on your timing, So, yes, you can't get that much stuffing inside a turkey anyway. Everybody wants the stuffing, so they want the big pan of stuff. So, I think what I would do if I were making it all at once is go about halfway through the cooking process and drain some of those juices off of the bird, put the bird back in the oven, then make your stuffing and then put your stuffing in the oven so that you've got the use of the juices coming out of the bird all at the same time. So, okay. Or, make a different dressing that's going to go with it, like a wild rice and cranberry dressing or something that doesn't require the juices of the turkey, and use those to make a gravy with or an au jus or something like that. So how long do I leave stuff out? Good rule of thumb is 4 hours at the limit, at room temperature, then it has to be thrown away. Don't cover it up, put it back in the fridge, and then want to eat it later. You're good till about 4 hours, and then it needs to go. If you're trying to save it and put it back in the fridge, you want to keep it under about 90 minutes out. And that depends on the temperature of the room. Now, we're talking about winter holidays right now, so it's not going to be 90 degrees out. But if you're talking about putting something out at a picnic in the summertime, the times come way down if the temperature is above 90 degrees. But we'll say average household home temperature is 68 degrees or so. You've got 2 to 4 hours to leave a dish out. It's perfectly safe. But then after 4 hours, it needs to get tossed. So,
if it's something simple like one of the classics, you take a date, you stuff it with a little cottage cheese or cream cheese rather, and maybe you wrap a little piece of bacon around it, and it's all cooked, it's done. Same thing, 4 hours out?
With the cheese inside of it, I'd say yeah. If it was just the bacon and the date, I'd say you have longer. That it would be fine sitting it out for a little longer. But if with the cheese, the dairy inside of it, I wouldn't take the chance of leaving it out longer than 4 hours.
Dairy and
so
eggs
what you do,
is what we worry
dairy
about.
Dairy and eggs
really.
And protein. Things that have high protein content are going to be the things that are going to be at the worst, at the forefront of getting, possible pathogens in them. So only set out a tray of a third of the amount that you made and leave the other two-thirds in the fridge. Rotate them out.
Sense.
Put them out in smaller batches. Don't try and put the whole thing out all at once. Now, if you've got something at temperature, if you can maintain a temperature above 140 degrees or below 40 degrees on your serving line, then you can go indefinitely. I mean, you really don't have a time limit on that unless the food has dried out and become gnarly because you've had it at that temperature for so long. But as long as you're maintaining a safe temperature, you've got longer. You can deal with it longer. You probably, again, don't want to hold on to it afterwards, but it'll you can have it set out longer. But I think the key is don't put everything out at once. Plan on refreshing your pans and, you know, putting out a smaller tray and then having backup in a safe location so you've got it cooled until it's time to serve it. As far as beverages and drinks go, and you know, if it's got sugar in it, it's probably going to be fine for hours and hours. But if it's a fresh apple juice that hasn't been pasteurized, which good luck finding that, but just in case you have managed to squeeze your own apples or something, then you want to make sure that that stays chilled below 40 degrees. So that danger zone that you're looking at is 40 degrees to 140 degrees. Anything that stays in that danger zone for longer than 4 hours really needs to get tossed. So that's your basic rule of thumb. But you can always put ice on the table. You can put cold packs under something. You can use Sterno and hot box, you know, hot heating elements to be able to keep things warm, keep things in a crock pot, keep the crock pot on, you know. Those things will help you maintain safe temperatures. And if we're talking about safe temperatures, I really would be remiss if I didn't say, and use a food thermometer to check them. You know, take a regular food thermometer and stick it down into your crock pot and see if your chili is maintaining a proper temperature. And that way you're not guessing and nobody gets sick because you've left food out. That's not very hospitable.
No.
So one of the questions
you must have gotten has to be about gluten-free. It's not as simple as don't do a bread product, don't do flour, because if you're using any kind of commercial, prepackaged anything, they sneak it in there 72 ways to Sunday.
Not only that, but your turkey, what you do is gluten-free. You might have gluten injected into a solution in your turkey. So people who are gluten-free really need to be careful about the turkey sourcing that they do, because if you get one of the major brands, you might find Vital Wheat Gluten or something like that, a derivative, in the juices that are injected to keep it moist, to keep it up weight, things like that. So you really have to be careful. And there are lots of lists online of gluten-free turkey brands that you can buy to make sure that you've got a clean product there. Basically, gluten occurs in anything that has wheat, barley, or rye in it. And unlike corn, which is derived into a dizzying array of products like high fructose corn syrup and maltodextrin and things like that, gluten isn't quite so much. I mean, it is hidden in some things, but it's not like the list of corn products that you have to avoid if you're corn sensitive. So knowing a few keywords like Vital Wheat Gluten and things like that, just to make sure that you're steering clear of it, is good for that. Not only did I get questions about gluten-free, I also got vegetarian, vegan, and other types of things. And one of the keys to serving, especially if you don't have one type of food sensitivity coming, but you've got a bunch of food sensitivities coming, is do things in a, I'm going to say do it as a bar, and then I'm going to explain what I mean. For example, a soup bar, a potato bar, an ice cream bar, things where you can set out individual ingredients, a salad bar, you know, where you can do the prep work on your individual ingredients, set them out in a nice array so that they're beautifully displayed, and then let people build their own. And that takes a lot of the hassle off of you, because then you can put croutons out there on your salad bar, and the people who are gluten-free aren't going to get the croutons. They don't have to worry about picking anything out. They're just not going to select that. People who are dairy-free, not going to use the cheese. You know, and that is a wonderful way to accommodate a variety of, I don't want to say illnesses, but sensitivities, particularities, you know, I don't like green olives, whatever. You don't have to use them. You can just build your own, and that's good for soup, chili, sandwiches, salads, potatoes, nachos. There's all kinds of things that you can set out in that sort of situation where people then get to build their own, and it becomes kind of cool. You know, they like to do that. They can put their own combination on it, put their own spin on it, have just as much of whatever ingredient that they like and not as much of another. And they get to have exactly what they want. And that takes a lot of stress off of you. It's not nearly as much work to just prep individual ingredients as it is to create a whole recipe, make the whole thing, write down your ingredient list. You don't even have to do that with a bar situation. So that's number one on my suggestion list of, if you've got a bunch of different people coming with a variety of different considerations, just don't sweat it so much and just put out individual ingredients for whatever it is that you're doing, and they can be happy making their own. So I think my next question, oh, go ahead. Did you have a comment?
Go ahead. No. If you got more questions, keep it going, because I'm just taking notes.
Okay. Several of the questions that I had were, what do I serve a vegetarian? How do I make a vegetarian entree? What do I do if I don't want to have a turkey at my Thanksgiving dinner? Things like that. And I had to kind of think about that, because there's lots of vegetarian options. And quite frankly, I think a lot of people go to Thanksgiving dinner are much more interested in all the side dishes than they are in the turkey anyway. I heard a whole long discussion yesterday about bashing turkey, how I didn't like the turkey anyway. They were only in it for the gravy and the side dishes, you know. Give me the mashed potatoes and the stuffing and the gravy and the cranberry sauce and the green beans, and I'm perfectly happy. I don't even need turkey.
Can you say carbs, 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 carbs?
Yeah, well, that's true. But, you know, Brussels sprouts and other vegetables and things like that can also be part of that. So you can certainly just omit that and just go with a lovely spread of different casseroles and dishes and sides and vegetables and salads and stuff like that, and have a groaning board that will satisfy anybody. But if you want to have a main presentation piece, because that's part of, you know, if you think about the Norman Rockwell painting of Thanksgiving, the four needs, I think, is the name of that series of paintings.
Four freedoms.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the mother is bringing this enormous turkey to the table. That Norman Rockwell Thanksgiving is what people think of, especially if they have never had a really stable home life. I have run into that before, where people who didn't have a really happy, stable, we do this every holiday kind of tradition, they craved that painting. That image was what really made it for them. So for that person, having something presented on a platter as the main attraction is what makes the meal. And so if you really want to do that, then you want to kind of think about, well, what can I do in the way of something that's kind of fancy? And one of the things that I like to do in this holiday, this season, is bake inside a pumpkin. And you could do a variety of things baked inside a pumpkin and present the pumpkin as your main course. I just saw something the other day about baking a soup in a pumpkin, where you take chicken stock and leeks and garlic and sage and whatever and a little bit of Parmesan cheese, and put it in the pumpkin and bake the whole thing in the oven after you've cleaned the seeds and the stringy parts out. Bake the whole thing in the oven, and then when you pull it out, you use a spoon to scoop out some of the flesh of the pumpkin, put that in the soup bowl, and then ladle some of the broth over it, and boom, you've got a lovely winter squash soup. You could also scoop out, puree it up with the soup, and serve it back that way, but, you know, without having to do fuss and muss, just scooping some of the pumpkin out. So that's nice. I like to bake pumpkin pies inside pumpkin shells, because I'm gluten-free and I love pumpkin pie, but I can't eat the shell. And most pastry shells that are gluten-free are like, okay, well, it's got an obligatory pastry shell, but it's not the best part of this. But I love cooking a pumpkin pie in a small pumpkin. Now, these are not jack-o'-lantern pumpkins. These are not the ones that are bred to be carved and be big and orange and round and, you know,
these
oversized.
Are the itty-bitty pie pumpkins.
We're talking smaller pie pumpkins or kabocha pumpkins, or, you know, when you buy canned pumpkin, you're usually buying butternut squash. Pumpkin is a wide-ranging term that means basically any orange-skinned winter squash. So, yeah, a can of pumpkin, even if it's got an orange jack-o'-lantern pumpkin on the front, probably contains butternut squash. That's what you're making your pumpkin pie out of. Really, it's not that much different.
I'm crushed.
And so if you think about things that could be baked in pumpkin, you could bake a big thing of your stuffing. You could put your stuffing inside of it. You know, if you made it a lovely wild rice and walnut and cranberry and blueberry and vegetable stock, maybe other types of grains mixed into that, and baked all of that inside of the pumpkin, that would be an awesome presentation piece. Or like I said, the pumpkin pie idea, or baking a soup in a pumpkin, but using a pumpkin as your presentation piece is a nice way to have a centerpiece presentation that's completely vegetarian, completely within the guidelines or the parameters of the holiday, because pumpkins are about as autumnal as you get, right? And so you've got that. Now, other things that you might want to do is just focus on a main vegetarian entree. I like to use specialty mushrooms when I'm doing a vegetarian entree. I've made...
when you say specialty mushrooms, are you talking cremini, porcini, dried, real, what?
Yeah, anything. Anything like that. Our local farmer's market is has some mushroom growers that show up, and from week to week, I don't know whether they're going to have oyster mushrooms or lion's mane mushrooms or shiitakes or a combination of all those. So I like to hit them and see what they've got. Or you can just go to a nice grocery store that's got a selection and find, you know, like you said, the creminis. You can use portobellos if you want, or even just white mushrooms. I mean, it doesn't have to be a specialty mushroom, but a lot of people don't know what to do with the specialty mushrooms. So using them as an entree is a nice way to feature them in an entree. I did a meal for a bunch of vegetarians two Christmases ago. And two Thanksgivings ago, and I made cabbage rolls stuffed with a combination of tempeh, and I'll talk about tempeh in a second, and a variety of different types of mushrooms that I chopped up, and then I made a sherried cream sauce to mix with it and to bake with it, and they were absolutely delicious, and there were hardly any left. Tempeh is one of my preferred products for a vegetarian protein. Tofu kind of leaves me flat. There's a couple of ways that I will like tofu, but for the most part, it's just, it's like tofu, like soy milk jello, you know, it just doesn't have any texture. Yeah. But tofu is made by grinding up soybeans, squeezing them, getting the soy milk out of them, and then adding a coagulate so that you've got a solid block of soy milk. That's basically what tofu is. But tempeh is taking the soybeans and fermenting them for a little while and then pressing them. So the end product has more fiber, less fat, more texture, more flavor. And I think it's a far superior thing to use as a meat substitute or as a protein portion of a vegan or vegetarian dish. So I bought tempeh, which you just buy in a package. You don't have to do your own fermenting or pressing or anything. You buy it just like that. And then crumble it up like crumbled meat, and then mix that with the vegetables, with the mushrooms, with whatever you want to put into it, and then blanch off your cabbage leaves, get big cabbage leaves, blanch them in some hot water. Once they get a little floppy, then you can stuff them with your mixture, roll them up, put them in a pan, and then bake them off, and then make a nice cream sauce, or you could make a marinara sauce, you could make some other kind of vegetable sauce if you're not doing dairy. And serve those. And those are wonderful and hearty and warm and filling and pretty. You know, they kind of fulfill a lot of those different types of needs for a big presentation piece. So think about...
Okay, now I have a question on the tempeh thing. What's the difference between tempeh and seitan? Because I've seen both, never used either.
Okay, tempeh is a soy product made with soybeans, like I just described. Seitan is vital wheat gluten. So seitan is a wheat gluten product. So depending on your vegetarian.
Is it high protein the way they talk about?
It is high protein, yeah. It's because gluten is the protein component of wheat. So it's actually a protein. So, yeah, when you get the starch out of a wheat flour, for example, what you're left with is the protein component, and that's what vital wheat gluten is, and that's what seitan is. And seitan has a texture that's not as good as tempeh. Tempeh would be my favorite for textural, you know, products as far as vegetarian protein products go. I obviously don't eat seitan because I can't eat gluten, so it's right off the menu for me. But some people like it. Even before I knew I was gluten-free, I didn't like seitan. I didn't like the texture of seitan. It tastes like whatever you cook it with, very much like tofu. So the flavor of it is really not an issue. But I don't like, I don't really care for it. It's kind of got a kind of a spongy texture that didn't really ever set with me. And I know a lot of vegetarians that love it. So it's certainly a, an option if you want to do that. But if you're worried about gluten-free people, then it's not an option. I mean, some people can't eat soy either. So it depends, again, on who you're serving and what they need to eat as to which one of those you want to go with. But that's the difference. So, yeah, you would like tempeh. Try tempeh because it's definitely got it all going on over tofu, I think. Unless you're using tofu to make a sauce or a pudding or a pie, you know. And then in that case, you want the smooth, creamy texture of tofu. But if you're trying to make an entree, then tofu just is kind of bland and doesn't really bring much to the party. So that's why I like tempeh instead of that. So that would be a good entree. And think about things that you can present. Even if it's you're going to use a big soup tureen and make that your presentation, you carry in the soup tureen and go, ta-da, here we are, make the big presentation at the table and then serve people soup out of the tureen. You know, at least you're bringing something large. So think about what it is you're going to bring to the table that is your presentation piece. If you're looking to completely take out the turkey out of the equation, what are you going to present? Because presentation and showmanship is everything in this big meal. Think about the people who have that Norman Rockwell painting in their heads, and that's your audience that you're trying to appease here.
That was the Thanksgiving that I grew up with, and we're almost out of time here, but I do want to remind people, if you're like me and you're a little, you know, obsessive about what goes where. I learned that from my mother. She used to put little pieces of paper in all of the serving dishes. The green beans would go here and the stuffing would go here. And it was
idea.
The same every year. And then one year, my Uncle Arnold took the last serving of the green beans, looked in the dish and said, oh, I was wondering what they were. And my mother was mortified because the little slip that said green beans was still in the bottom. So if you're going to do that, remember to take the pieces of paper out of your serving dishes before you do this. Christy, we've run out of time, unfortunately, because there's another 6 hours to talk about. Now, I know that there is a new project that you're working on that I believe is done in time for the holidays. Do you want to really quickly tell people what that is and where they can find it?
Absolutely. It's going to be an app for your phone, and it'll be Mrs. Claus Cooks. And you should be able to get it through Cookbook Cafe, which you can look up online. Or certainly through my website at AskChefChristy.com. And yes, it is in progress. By the time this airs, we will have it in people's hands, but it's not going to be cookies. I haven't quite figured out the entire list of recipes yet, but it's not going to be Mrs. Claus cooking cookies because I think people need to know how to cook more than just cookies at the holidays.
Yes, they do. Again, this has been a podcast you're going to want to download because we've talked about holiday serving, but this will work for you any time of year. And Christy, you are always so wonderful to have on. I just kind of sit back and grab my cup of tea and listen to your role because you are a font of knowledge and at the same time, extremely, I think the word is accessible. It's not that you're some fancy cook that we could never aspire to. It's real food, real possibilities, and really, really delicious. So I'm thrilled that you were able to join us today.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful time being Mrs. Claus.
Oh, always. This is our 20th season, so we're gonna have a great time.
Wonderful. For those of you who are my regular listeners, as always, if you need to find me, you can go and find me at my website, Fire Through Spirit. On Facebook at Fire Through Spirit, Twitter is Corby Mitlide, or you can always give me a buzz at 877-321-CORBY. That's 877-321-2672. It's the start of the holiday season. I can hear the starting gun going off in the background. Remember, the holidays are not just about what do I get, it's what do I give. It's friends. It's remembering that we have survived another year and we're so glad to have our friends around us. That, my friend, is the true centerpiece of any party any of us do.
Well,
until next week, it's Corby Mitlide. We'll see you then. Have a great 7 days.
Thank you.